Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Koivic Pod on Off the Ball.
I remember on the way home distinctly talking to my dad, like on the way home, and saying like, "Geez, like Karen, like she's such a leader. She's so like she'll just boss every drill, every match."
Subscribe to the Koivic Pod on the Off the Ball app now.
Drake May is the second coming of Tom Brady.
I mean, either that or Miles Garrett caught him at the weekend and took him out the same way he took every took Drake May down
five sacks.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Like Miles Garrett has never had like a signature game, and this won't be a signature game because he's a Cleveland Brown. Actually, this is probably the perfect signature game for him because they lost 33 or whatever, and he was the best player on the pitch by a distance. I don't think he's ever had a game like this though, where it was like you'll hang your hat on that and you'll go, "Remember when Miles Garrett did this?"
And against, well, I mean, obviously Drake May is mobile. It's not like he was a stationary. I think they're. Offensive line is about average or slightly below.
Well, yeah, but their left tackle, whose name I have here somewhere that's escaping me, who actually came out and praised after the game, that quote's there if you want to have a look at it in a second. But Campbell, Will Campbell, that's their left tackle. He's their high first round pick from this year, and he's been very good for the most part. He had a struggle at the start, but he's this really strong, big 6'7", whatever he is, bully of a left tackle, and he was getting help all the time. And Miles Garrett was still just like, "Hey, I'm a different level to these other NFL pass rushers you've dealt with."
Yeah, he was praising him. He said, "He's strong. You want to set the tempo and the pace of the game with power. He was able to be pretty firm in his stance and keep me from knocking him back and just tried to hit him with different looks, trying to keep him off guard." And then he sacks the quarterback 5 times.
Yeah, like to be fair, now look, this is, I'm long past the time where I used to watch every single game, every granular detail that you could possibly watch it in, where I'd know everything about the safeties and everything about the cornerbacks and everything about each offensive lineman. But this game and this performance was one where I wanted to go back and look at that properly. And two of his sacks came against Will Johnson on the left tackle, and like he got 5. One came against the left guard, and the others two came when he flipped over to the other side of the field. When he went against Johnson, like
Campbell, sorry,
is it Campbell? Yeah, I keep saying Johnson, I don't know why. When he went against Campbell, for like, this is a smaller measure and probably one you're forcing a little bit, it was tougher than when he was on the opposite side. So like Campbell had
only the 2 sacks.
Yeah, but like it took him longer to get through, I guess, which is a kind of a key thing of being an offensive lineman.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
And normally against the guy who's not Miles Garrett, that means you don't give up a sack. But against Miles Garrett, that means you still look like you're terrible.
It's almost more of a shame. And I mean, I realize lots of people are like, "No, this is exactly how it should be. You should be loyal. You're going to make the same money anywhere you go. It doesn't really matter. He's going to be a legend forever." But it is so disappointing that he's not in a good team.
It's also like, you talk about loyalty and you're talking about the Cleveland Browns. That franchise wasn't even loyal to its original city, for God's sake. Like, look, but it's one of those things that you can't really criticize him, because he's made more money there than he ever would have in his life. He'll reach a point where it's like, "Right, I'm going to force my way out. I'm going to go somewhere else." Was it Jared Allen who did that later in his career? He was with the Vikings for a long time. He kind of went a couple of years past that opportunity. Julius Peppers, maybe similar. He probably got out a little bit earlier, and then he had that late career renaissance with the Bears, where he was this incredible freak pass rusher who, like, because Julius Peppers is always a freak pass rusher, but he was on bad Panthers teams for a long time. And like, you have players like this who they reach this point that I think Garrett got to probably last year, where it was like, "Right, you need to go now. You need to go and force your way out and find somewhere else." But he stayed, and now he's going to be probably getting, next time he'll come free is 3 or 4 years from now. He won't be able to force himself out next year. The contract is just, it's not going to let him have that opportunity unless there's void in it that I don't know of. And the Browns are just not going, like, Dylan Gabriel, like, this is another part of this game I wanted to talk about. Dylan Gabriel, I knew very little about coming in. Left-handed quarterback, not very athletic, which straight away is kind of like, oof, second-round pick. That means you weren't very precise with your technical details as well. And he's just not at that level. He's Desmond Ridder. Like, this is not a guy who you can build your offense around and get excited about and move forward with. Like, you've seen what Joe Flacco's doing in Cincinnati. He's a massive step below Joe Flacco. And Sanders wasn't available this past weekend, but like everything from him, you're kind of going, talent is there, but like the miming responses after being questioned about not being the starter and all that kind of stuff, I just can't see any of that working out anytime soon. So you're looking at the Browns and you're going, how many years away are you? How many years left does Garrett have of being the best player in the league?
Well, it was only this year that new contract was signed.
Yeah.
So he had the opportunity in it was March, they signed the, it was, you know, average per year, 40 million a year. So obviously, it's quarterback money.
Yes.
You know, but he would have got that almost anywhere, yeah. really. Like 10 or 12 teams would have made the efforts to get rid of people to make him part of their, and now I realize he would have probably had to send at that stage multiple first round picks, but like,
and Michael Parsons basically, like, yeah.
You know, teams can survive and thrive when they're forced to do stuff with.
And if we're being completely rational about it, like, so where he would have lost money was if he had to hold out for a year or if he had to stay in Cleveland on his original deal, it would delay the extra bonus money. But like the difference there, I know this sounds ridiculous, the difference there is only about 10 million. Now, but when you're going from 50 million to 40 million, it's not the same as going from 10 million to zero.
And you have to assume that, say he was in LA or Dallas or in New York. Well, but the level of celebrity you have there makes that 10 million easy to recoup pretty quickly.
Absolutely. He'd be the face of so many things if he was in Los Angeles. Like Aaron Donald
seems like a great fella.
Well, yeah, except for that swinging helmet incident thing. But yeah, generally, he seems like a great fella.
Like, you know,
a lot of us agreed with helmet swinging, is that what we're saying?
Reads poetry, you know, looks after his ma. There's no, so far, there are no skeletons. That's obviously
it. He's dating the Olympian or Winter Olympian skier or snowboarder or whatever it is. So there's already that level of fame that he can tap into. Because obviously, in this day and age, he can probably make more money off his Instagram account than players would have made 20 years ago, you know?
Yeah. All right, so look, what a stunning performance. I saw footage of one of the giant New England Patriots on the sideline just like blown away by the whole thing. As his team completely dominates them, and I mean, Drake May is obviously the story of this game.
Oh, as usual. He's like, it is really annoying that Mick has this quarterback now again. It's like you've suffered for like all of 5 years, all of 6 years, and this guy is just every week he's not playing brilliantly every week. It's not like we're not watching Jaden Daniels' rookie season again. But every week there's four or five players who are like, oh, yeah, that's just reaffirming how good and how talented you are.
Is Shedeur Sanders, are we going to get to see him?
Yeah, we have to. Like, you can't keep doing what Dylan Gabriel's doing. But the thing is, like, Deshaun Watson is going to be back soon. And I completely forgot about Deshaun Watson. Now, I don't know, will the Browns go back with him and bring him back in? But I like that franchise. They've already put themselves in that position where they are the Deshaun Watson franchise.
Yeah, it's too late now. There's no going back.
The reputation isn't going to be repaired. But if you put Sanders in rather than Watson, at least the narrative changes to something else. And if he plays well, it does completely change the franchise because talent level-wise, like, he's not who he thinks he is, but he is exceptionally talented relative to other quarterbacks. Like, I think he'd be doing what Cam Ward is doing in Tennessee. Now, that sounds like nothing, but Cam Ward's playing very well in Tennessee. The team around him is just terrible, and the team in Cleveland is not great, but it's much better than what's around Cam Ward in Tennessee.
Okay, so the Patriots, very good. The Browns, bad. It feels like we're stuck in any point between 1999 and today.
And probably for the next 15 years as well, based on what Drake May is doing.
Yeah. So where do you want to go next? We have the Packers, Steelers, the 49ers, Texans, Justin Fields and Joe Flacco, the Colts, for real, the Bears, Ravens, Eagles, Giants. So we've got to get through quite a bit here. Where do you want to start?
We'll be quick. There's only two of us this week. We don't talk too much anyway. It's always making it delays us. Steelers-Packers is the game to me because I want to also go back to Steelers-Bengals. We weren't on last week, but Steelers-Bengals was Thursday night and Jamar Chase caught 16 passes or whatever it was, and we'll talk about them as well in a while. But the Steelers secondary, for the most part, they kind of did everything right in that game, and it wasn't until the final drive when they messed up where they let Chase have two uncontested catches from bad call initially and then a blown assignment. But then this week, you just like, I've had this concern, I've spoken about it previously, and it came back to that Bengals game where the Steelers secondary, their tackling is terrible, they seem quite slow, and oh my god, this game, like Tucker Kraft, who is like a good tight end, I would say he's on the level of like Charles Clay back when he was in Miami, or remember Delanie Walker before he went to Tennessee, where he was like this really good
the 49ers,
but he wasn't ever the focal point, he wasn't ever like, nice, this is an incredible player, you've got to stop hitting Delanie Walker. That's what Tucker Kraft is in the Packers offense right now. And he was just catching the ball, and he's this big athletic tight end, and he's a good player, but he was catching the ball in the flat and turning up the sideline and running around Steelers defenders and breaking tackles, and you're kind of going, this would make a lot of sense if it was like Tyreek Hill or someone, but that's Tucker Kraft. And he had made that one big play. He had another 40-plus yard play where he caught the ball over his shoulder and ran away from two defenders. But the third one, which is his second touchdown of the game, was the most terrifying one because he runs a little slant route, catches the ball. Joey Porter Jr., the cornerback, who should be much more athletic and much faster than Tucker Kraft, he can't keep up with him. and then the safety's coming down and Tucker Kraft just runs straight to the end zone and the safety's like 5 yards away and you're going, these are meant to be the best athletes on the field, your defensive backs, and the Steelers guys are just so slow. And this morning I woke up and I saw the news that the Steelers have traded for Kyle Duggar, which makes a lot of sense for the Steelers at least. The Patriots, this has to be a Mike Vrabel thing, because they gave, speaking of contracts, they gave Kyle Duggar $14 million per year in the offseason. Kyle Duggar's been a very good safety. He's a very talented player. He's one of these heat-seeking missiles where you put him in the middle of the field and he comes forward and takes people out. And he's done that very well. He can be specifically assigned to an athletic tight end and like man mark him out of the game. Not perfectly, but he's gone up against Travis Kelce before and done quite well. So that's the perfect addition for the Steelers.
Right.
The only thing you're kind of going is...
It was a seventh round pick.
Yes.
Sixth and seventh round picks.
The Patriots got rid of him essentially.
Yeah.
So you're kind of going, they just wanted the salary off. Maybe this is a Vrabel thing though. Vrabel will get rid of guys and it often doesn't make sense.
But sometimes it's to do with character stuff that we don't know. He's not a, you know, they've asked him to do something and he didn't do it. And they're like, well, okay, if that's, you know, and it's like making an example of him for everybody
it's
else.
More than likely what it is. But the Steelers could benefit a lot from this because he's exactly what they needed.
I mean, I was writing the Browns off 5 minutes ago, but they're just two games back from the Steelers because the Steelers obviously got beaten at the weekend. The Bengals are 3-5. The Steelers are 4-3. The Ravens are 2-5. And the Browns are 2-6. So obviously, you know, it would be some comeback from this point. But you've seen none of these teams are good, right?
Well, this is the thing. Like, I think it was 2 weeks ago I came on and I was like, yeah, I'm buying into the Steelers now after being a little skeptical. And since then, they've lost two games that they should have won. And did they lose? Did they lose the Sunday before as well, the Thursday night game? I think they did. So I think there might be three games late. Like, that division, no one seems to want it. And it's going to be a recycled thing over and over again. And myself and Mick had this conversation a few weeks back of, like, I thought the Ravens season was over. Definitely over. And they played a couple of games and Mick was like, oh, I agree with you, it's over. But then they beat the Bears and it's like, Lamar's back soon.
Yeah.
And now and the other teams aren't taking this by the grasp. And, the Bengals suddenly look good again.
You just need to get to the playoffs alive. And at that point, there's a reset and everybody has to assess who's fit and who's not. And just staying alive is all you got to do at this stage, particularly because there are so many bad teams.
And there's only one Super Bowl winning quarterback in that division. So, and Steelers have him, as well as TJ Watt and a lot of veteran players there, as much as they're all a bit slow and need to be a little bit faster. The one thing I will want to mention as well from this game, Christian Watson came back and he is highlighting why he is... It's an interesting one because, like, if I say who's the best receiver on the Bengals, you'll immediately go Jamar Chase, but you know T. Higgins is really good as well. If I say on the Vikings who's the best receiver on the Vikings, you go Justin Jefferson, but you know Jordan Addison is really good as well. So in Green Bay, not everyone will agree who the best wide receiver is, but I think Christian Watson, when he came back, even in the few plays he made, he really highlights why he's so important. He has that really large catch radius that Jordan Love loves, and he can also just run away from defenders in behind, which they've been missing. It's going to open up everything.
Yeah.
The Packers, again, like I keep saying this, like Micah Parsons didn't have a big game, but he just took over one drive in the fourth quarter and basically ended the game. Like four plays in a row, he was just in the backfield on top of Rodgers, and that's the potential that keeps showing its head.
They're 5-1. The Lions are 5-2 in that division.
5-1. Jeez, I feel like they haven't had a great season.
The Bears are 4-3, and the Vikings are 3-4. So, like, there's nothing really separating those teams at the moment in the NFC North. They also have Jaden Reed to come back, and I know none of them are brilliant. Like
but they all work
exactly. And all of a sudden, if you've got four, you have options, and there's all sorts of things you can do there. So. Things looking up for the Packers. So where do you want to go next?
Well, you're speaking of one team that has loads of weapons. Let's go to a team that has none in your 49ers, because this is actually the game I sat down and watched on Sunday. And because, to be honest, I hadn't really watched much of Mac Jones, because I actually liked Mac Jones more than most people when he was coming into the league. And I know he's done well. And I actually thought he played fairly well in this game. But it was a real sign of the lack of weapons. It's like they have to try and hit those deep out routes over and over and over again. And you need a perfect throw for them because there's just no speed in the offense. Like, Juwan Jennings is good, but like he made a great catch at the end. He made a couple of good catches going out, but he also had a drop on a deep ball. And he also couldn't catch up to another deep ball.
He's supposed to be your fourth option.
That's what they've got, a team of those.
He's your first option at the moment. Ricky Pearsall, good, gets injured, has a great game, comes back, gets injured again. So, like, until he plays five games in a row, you can't really say he is anything.
Yeah.
And they're rubbing Christian McCaffrey away like a cheap crayon at the moment. It's like, go there, you save us, go. And he's totally fit at the moment.
He looks great. Like, he's got 50-plus yards receiving and rushing in 6 of 8 games this year or whatever it is. Like, he's 100% back and it just doesn't matter. But I do think, like, there's been conversations that Mac Jones has been good enough that there should be a competition between the two. That game for me highlighted why it has to be Purdy starting, because Mac Jones can't move and that offensive line can't give him a good enough pocket.
Purdy obviously was playing with some kind of injury, and his interception rate at the moment is bad.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, why the controversy, if you're just average level, people are like, well, you know, maybe an average level and Kyle Shanahan scheming things, that's enough. Whereas Purdy still had a little bit of gunslinger in him when he wasn't fully fit. And I think because of that, it looked awful. So that's what people are comparing and contrasting with. You might be right that Purdy is definitely better than him. We just haven't seen it in a while.
You also, but you need someone who can elevate the guys around him now as well, because you don't have your main starters. Like, you don't have Ayuk there, you don't have Pearsall there. Maybe if you had them in and Jones was there and Kittle was fully, I know he's back and playing, but if he was fully healthy and fully effective, then it might all work. I just don't think with the talent they've got right now. That's why I found this game kind of interesting and fascinating, why I ended up watching it, because there's a lot to learn in that 49ers offense, but the Texans as well on the other side, there's so much going on there where it's like we're near three now at Stroud.
Yeah.
Like, this should be the time when he's got the best thing, the best supporting cast around him. And they've dismantled their offensive line. Their weapons at wide receiver are not great. The running back, Woody, whatever his name is, he's fine, but he's not like, you should have developed an offense around him by now. And I watched him and look, he's not as good as we all expected him to be early on. But I felt so bad for him, because like, they were moving the ball a lot and everything was going quite well against the 49ers, and all of that is the 49ers defense being decimated. But he's carrying so much and dealing with so much there and getting such little help, and especially the defense isn't as good as it should be, even though it was pretty good at the weekend. So the Texans to me are the kind of under-discussed story, because they should be pushing in the AFC as a playoff contender and a real, really good team, but they're not.
Again, just to caution, right, they're 3-4, which probably suggests they will end up, if they were to continue at this rate, squeaking into the playoffs, right?
Yeah, like we just have too many playoff teams.
We do,
like,
we do. That's the bit.
Like, we have to stop measuring based on that, I feel like.
Well, the thing is there a possibility that team forms over the next 5-6 weeks and they begin to get some of that going? Where Stroud looked like he'd lost confidence last year, but a couple of wins like this,
yeah,
all of a sudden might make them better. Do you feel like they're a lost cause at this point?
Not a lost cause, but I think they deserve a lot of criticism around Stroud because they haven't built properly. Like, they're giving away Laramie Tunsil for nothing, essentially, in the offseason. They're making all these... They actually, at the start of the year, I think they gave away the former Jaguars left tackle, whose name escapes me right now. They gave him away because they're like, actually, we've loads of offensive linemen, we don't need him. And you never give away a competent offensive lineman, no matter how much you're paying him. And now they're looking at their offensive line going, oh my God, this isn't good enough. We could use that guy who we gave away a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And it's just decisions like that just don't make sense. And now, Tank Dell getting injured, and like, they've had other wide receiver issues that are out of their control. Like, Stephon Diggs not working out, and obviously looks great now in New England. Like, that could have been a great deal for them. Like, it just feels like they should have done more and they should have set him up better. And like, what I would say is, if you look at someone like the Bears, I know they're a year behind because Caleb Williams is only in year 2. I feel like they've done a much better job of like constructing around their quarterback than the Texans have, even though we gave the Texans so much credit initially.
And he is on his rookie deal. Like, you know, somebody like that should have been in for Myles Garrett, saying, hey, we're going to add you to this. And we're, anyway.
Yeah. Give him whatever picks you need. Put him next to Will Anderson Jr. My God.
There's space there. And then, did they not give up all their picks because of the Will Anderson?
Well, they did, but that was the next year, so
yeah,
they should
be
back to normal now.
Exactly.
And just keep giving them away. It doesn't
really
matter.
Exactly. F them picks. Where do you want to go next?
Let's talk about Justin Fields and Joe Flacco. And actually, let's start with Fields, because I think Fields is an interesting one, because there's a little bit of nuance to this, I feel. You have Woody Johnson's quote in front of you there.
It's hard when you have a quarterback with a rating that we got. He has the ability, but something is just, it's not jiving. If you look at any head coach with a quarterback like that, you're going to see similar results across the league. You have to play consistently at that position, and that's what we're going to try to do. There's a bit of a word soup there, but the undertone is, this guy's no good and I'm not blaming my coach.
Yeah, that was very much where he was coming from. And I think for context here, this is not something that was overheard. This was something he openly said in front of a lot of people who were holding microphones in front of him and cameras. So he was very aware of what he was doing. And now he can sit around.
Was this before the game?
Yes.
Right.
This is last week. Now he can sit there and say, look, I sparked a good performance from Justin Fields. We got our first win. I did the right thing. And other people could turn around and go, Justin Fields proved you wrong. See, he played this game. He's much better than you said he was. But I think actually what happened here is Woody Johnson was absolutely validated by everything that happened on Sunday, because that was Justin Fields' best game for the Jets. That was Justin Fields' best game since probably early in his last year in Chicago. So that's 2 years ago. And that game was not that good. Like the issue for Justin Fields has always been his ceiling is just like on individual plays. He makes incredible plays. He threw an incredible touchdown on Sunday to in the corner route against pressure where he made an incredible throw and then showed great poise in the pocket. But then after that, he's fallen over himself. And then after he's limited himself, he's running out of bounds for a yard gain instead of throwing to the wide open receiver downfield. So like this kind of stuff, I think what Woody Johnson did was 100% stupid and really wrong. And what he's trying to do is back his head coach, but he could have backed his head coach without attacking his quarterback so easily. Now, I can understand he's probably frustrated too, so there was probably a temptation there to say something like that and do something like that. It's just the whole. It's another reflection on, like we were talking about with the Browns, this is why these franchises don't get better. That's the tone that's being set at the top. That's a guy who's just throwing a cat amongst the pigeons for absolutely no reason inside his own locker room. And I did find it interesting when Fields finished the game and came out afterwards, he said, that's outside noise. And I'm like, oof, it's not though.
No, it's the owner.
It's the owner. Now, you can say it's outside the locker room.
Yeah.
But if you, like, win
he's
a game...
He's also in the locker room.
Yes.
He's, you know, so he's making speeches and handing out balls and paying your wages.
Yeah. So you've got that fissure there right in the middle of the franchise, which is just incredibly Jets-like. The only difference would have been 10 or 15 years ago, we'd have had some, like, comical head coach like Rex Ryan or something who would just add to the whole thing and make it even more worse. But Aaron Glenn seems to be kind of like, cool head, shut all this down, which is what we said he was. And
So they're 1-7 and maybe won't be getting the first pick. I don't know. I haven't done any research yet on whether or not the first pick is going to be particularly valuable next year. Are the quarterbacks any good?
I have no idea. Me and college football just don't click. I can't sit there and watch it. It takes forever and they're all terrible at the sport.
All right, on that note.
Let's touch on Flacco from this game. I remember I said 2 weeks ago I didn't think it was a great trade because Flacco loves throwing to his tight end and the Bengals have wide receivers. And he's actually doing a better job than Joe Burrow was in feeding Jamar Chase. Chase has 28 catches in the last two games, and he should probably have 33 or 34, but he's had one or two plays he just couldn't make. He's had a couple of defensive pass interference penalties. He's had a couple of plays erased by penalties elsewhere. And the whole offense looks brilliant. Like Chase Brown's ripping off big gains. Now I know they were playing the Jets, and the Jets are obviously a mess, and they lost to the Jets in the end, but they scored 38 points, so it wasn't the offense's fault. Flacco looked great. It looked like, what's happening within this sport right now and in this league where two of the best quarterbacks right now are Joe Flacco and Daniel Jones, and Joe Flacco was given away mid-season before becoming that. It's just baffling. But also, brilliant to watch.
Why do you think it is happening?
I think what happens when you go to a backup quarterback or a guy you don't want to be your starter, and Jones is a different thing, but in the Flacco specifically, your coach goes, oh, we need to simplify everything and let's just get the ball in the hands of our best players. And you're kind of, every single time this happens, I always go, well, why wouldn't you do that with your starter? Because, like, Chase, you could always do this with.
I guess because what's going to happen is this is a short burst and it's going to last 3 or 4 weeks. Everybody will work it out.
Yeah.
They'll double team Chase and be like, right, let T. Higgins beat us here.
Well, that's the thing.
Yards.
They've been good on that the last 2 weeks because in the first game against the Steelers, the biggest play, well, not the biggest play, but the decisive play at the end is T. Higgins is left one-on-one on the left side. And Flacco hits him with a deep ball over Jalen Ramsey. And actually, Higgins could have ran into the end zone for the score, but actually slid down to set up the field goal and get the game-winning field goal at the end and with time running out. And then last weekend, Higgins has one catch in the whole game, but it's a 44-yard touchdown when he's left in single coverage because they're all focused on Chase. So if you keep that balance right, defense is never going to have the solutions when you have that many weapons. And if the quarterback is making good decisions, it's easy enough.
Daniel Jones and Jonathan Taylor, another three. Is this his third three touchdown game this season?
It could be his tenth this way. It feels like his 30th.
For Jonathan Taylor.
It's just like everything on it. It reminds me of the Falcons when Matt Ryan won the MVP and Kyle Shanahan was there, and literally everything just worked the way it's supposed to work. And like even on defense, things are working perfectly.
14 touchdowns so far this season. We're heading into week 9.
For Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, he's doing all right. It's a bit like Jalen Hurts level numbers, even though he's not throwing the ball all the time. Well, if you look at the offense is averaging 33.1 points per game, first in the NFL, 6.4 yards per play, first in the NFL, plus 92 point differential, first in the NFL. First downs, they have the most first downs in the per game, and they have the fewest punts, 12, all season, so that's obviously first as well. It's mind-boggling. Like, I don't really care about this weekend's game because it's the Titans. Like, everyone's going to beat the Titans and they should beat the Titans comfortably. But it's just the execution that's going on. Like, Like, Shane Steichen is someone I criticised a lot because I didn't think he ever played to Anthony Richardson's strengths and he never built the offence around him. He's doing that perfectly with Daniel Jones, so you've got to give him a lot of credit when he's doing it. Like, so
maybe it's like, you know, you give me the tools here, buddy, and I will fix it. But that guy, he's not the tools.
Yeah, well, that's essentially what it was, because no one expected him to start Daniel Jones even this year, and he went out on his own and did that. So I think, like, Taylor to me is the tone setter of the offense. Without him, it's just not, it wouldn't function the way it's functioning, because everything is built off the run and that all their play action passing game and all that kind of stuff. But like, Daniel Jones had this before and he wasn't able to make it work. So you've got to give Daniel Jones a lot of credit, because he had Saquon Barkley and he was the reason everyone like pointed to the Giants. It must be really frustrating as a Giants fan, because you're like, Saquon Barkley's over in the Eagles and they've won a Super Bowl and they look great. And Daniel Jones has gone to the Colts and he's like looking great doing all this. And you're kind of going, we had those two pieces and we had good thing pieces around them. Why didn't it work, kind of a thing? Like, it's the sport is very confusing a lot of the time.
Well, partly it's to do with Daniel Jones perhaps not being mature enough to deal with everything that was going on in New York, and slightly potentially overdrafted at the time, although now it doesn't look like it. He didn't sit for long enough. Is that
he didn't sit at all, as far as I remember.
So,
if it was, it was only a couple of games.
Yeah, so I don't know. Like, is it just that sometimes good things and good people fail in situations and it's not actually anybody's fault?
100%.
They're just not ready for it?
Probably. There's probably always someone to blame in the NFL, just because there are people responsible for the culture and people responsible for building the team from the ground up. Like, everyone's drafted, every team is put together. But yes, being in New York, like, there's different challenges there. Everyone always talks about it, like, media aspect, fans there. Being in Indiana, being the backup throughout the offseason, everyone's focused on Anthony Richardson, that probably helped. Being that bit older, like, he's, what, 28, I'm guessing now, 29?
Yeah.
Like, that bit of age, that bit of maturity, we do kind of tend to forget these guys come into the league and are 23-year-olds and are 24-year-olds and say, oh yeah, your brain's probably not even fully developed still at the moment and we expect you to carry this whole franchise.
Ladainian Tomlinson got 31 touchdowns in 2006, of which 28 were rushing touchdowns. So I'd say that's quite the record, but I wouldn't say that it's beyond Jonathan Taylor if he stays fit for the rest of the year.
I'm pretty sure if you ever reach a point where you're being compared to Ladainian Tomlinson for anything, you're doing pretty damn well.
Yeah, he's just had an absolutely outrageous season so far. So, okay.
I mean, not long ago, the Colts were fighting to try and not pay him as well, remember? So
to not pay Jonathan Taylor?
Yeah, remember, he had to fight for his money as well. So, like, he's proven himself properly as well. And he's someone who's, like, we were talking about Myles Garrett earlier, he's someone who's gotten paid and gotten better, which is unusual at the running back position.
Jim Irsay obviously died in the last year as well, and his daughter's down on the sideline taking notes and, like,
listening in over the microphone, or earphone.
Being involved, so maybe having somebody, I don't know. I mean, obviously Jerry Jones is the opposite of this, where he's totally involved and it's like, oh, we're not just one player away on defense. And, maybe you're two players away on defense.
It is one of those things. I feel like if the Colts were losing games, we'd be able to rip into them for so many different things. But because they're winning, we're kind of like, all of this makes sense.
Yeah. The Bears versus the Ravens.
Oh man, Bears fans, what a tough week. What a tough weekend. Like, we'll focus on the Bears just for a moment, just because, like, this is a team that was supposed to be taking a step forward this year. This is a quarterback in his second year who's shown signs of being good and being more composed. He's better at dealing with pressure. He's making better throws. And you're, like, going up against this beaten up Ravens team. Now, they have people back on defense, and the Bears have a lot of injuries as well, but they have their key players there. Like, they're not missing their starting quarterback. They're not missing the star wide receiver or anything like that. You've got, like, DJ Moore there and Roma Dunza there. And you're just thinking, right, Bears, not make a statement, but this is a mature team. Go have a professional performance. Get this over the line and get your season. Keep going in the right direction like you've been doing this year. And they just, throughout the whole game, it's like they're just not in sync with each other. Caleb's holding the ball too long. And the game's there in the balance. Like, and it's not like getting away from them. And he throws this interception deep in his own territory that he should never throw. He's staring down his wide receiver and Nate Wiggins undercuts the route. And it's just like, that's the play we need you to not be making. It's year two now. Like, rookie year, fair enough, that happens. You can't do that from your own end zone at that critical point in the game. That's such an easily avoided mistake, and it leads to a Ravens score, and the Ravens just go too far away from them. And it's like suddenly a game that was in the balance is over. It's done. And, like, you're meant to be this mature, developing team. That's not what you do, especially not against that team.
Okay. The Ravens on the other side, they're still alive. There's just the faint hint of a pulse.
Yeah, I look, we don't have to spend too much time talking about them because realistically it won't be defined until Lamar gets back. But I'm just so baffled why wasn't Tyler Huntley starting? Like, Tyler Huntley made so many plays in that game, made so many plays when he started previously. Obviously, he's not a starting caliber quarterback, but Cooper Rush did nothing. And Cooper Rush killed the whole offense. Huntley came back in. Suddenly, Derrick Henry's a better runner because they have to worry about him holding the ball, keeping it and running it. And Huntley actually makes more better throws. So it's like, I don't know. Sometimes these franchises do things and just confuse you. I have to assume Huntley is awful in practice. Like, he just can't hit a timing out route or whatever. And he's one of these guys who practices terribly but plays well in games. And that's why they don't
have to. Yeah, talking about practice.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on. The Eagles and the Giants, the tush push. You know, wasn't there a try at the weekend in the URC was given that wasn't given that they changed their mind about? It's a little bit like this, right? Where it's like,
Yeah, this is what really, really annoys me with the touch push. And like, as someone who hates it generally because I just find it boring and something that doesn't help the game and also is impossible to officiate. Like, this is the main issue with it. Like, they just call it forward progress stopped whenever the ball comes loose. From a defensive side, you're like, hold on a second, Jalen Hurts clearly fumbled here. He's reaching the ball forward. Forward progress hasn't stopped. The defense should get it. And the ref's just like, oh, blow the whistle, sorry. And he hadn't blown the whistle. He just saw the ball come out and he went, oh, I better blow the whistle and say forward progress has stopped. It's like, there's a great clip of Kayvon Thibodeau afterwards. And Kayvon Thibodeau is asked, what did you make of that call? And he said, oh, that's a bull call. And Brian Burns next to him just comes up behind him and stares him over and is like, not doesn't say it, but his face says, you're going to be fined. Change that answer. And Kayvon Thibodeau's like, oh, that's a brilliant call by the refs. You know, the refs know exactly what's going on there. All credit to the refs. You can't complain about decisions. And it's like this thing where he's clearly seething and he's clearly in the right. And everyone who watches that game who isn't an Eagles fan is like, that's a fumble. And it's huge. It's like massive impact in the game.
And in their season, in many ways.
Yeah.
They're like, they still only have two wins. And yet it feels like they've had a good season because they've discovered a quarterback. Now, they end up getting 38-20 defeat in that. They're playing the Niners this weekend, but they could easily beat the Niners.
Yeah, 100%. And, like, well, I think the challenge there is, like, Jackson Dart is now missing Cam Scadaboo with this awful ankle injury.
Yeah.
He's missing Bellinger, went out as well in the game. Malik Nabers is already down. Like, there's your starting tight end, starting running back, starting wide receiver. So, like, realistically, anything they can do, they'll be happy with it at this stage. Just get Dart through this year healthy and let him progress, and that'll be kind of a good year for
them. Coaching ticket now, they've done enough.
I don't know. It's a difficult one. I think you kind of have to, just because you don't want to mess with your quarterback's development at this stage. But
you mentioned Kayvon Thibodeau. For whatever reason, his name keeps coming up in trade talks.
Yeah,
it's because he's got 1 year left. You can rent him for the rest of the season for no money, and you have him under contract for a year, and then you can franchise tag him if you want. So, like, you can have that awkward relationship with him. And he's very good, but I don't know why they would be getting rid of a piece at this point.
It's just you're putting two and two together. 1 year left. Abdul Carter was drafted. They won't want to pay all of them. But I mean, if you've got this, look, we were talking about with the Texans. You've now got a quarterback on a rookie wage scale contract for four years.
So keep him.
Keep your three star pass rushers. Like, yeah. Why would you get rid of any of them?
Yeah, it doesn't. I don't think it makes sense, especially if you feel like you might be building something here.
Okay, someone like Darius Slayton, I'd probably trade because he probably won't be a factor for them next year and the year after. Although I don't know what he's got left in his contract.
So the Saints, 1-7.
Yeah, not a whole lot to say, if I'm honest with you. I just wanted to take a note that Tyler Shough is starting for them. There
is that how you pronounce it? Sorry, I was looking at it. It was like the Irish would be shock. Shock.
Yeah, I have no idea if I'm right. I'm just going with what I've heard. So, Tyler Shough, Tyler Shough, whatever Shough. He is. He probably hopes he's going to shock the world because everyone expects him to be terrible. From everything I know with all the draft people, they were like laughing at the Saints when he drafted him. But here's the thing. Draft people do that an awful lot with quarterbacks, and an awful lot of the time they're proven wrong. So you don't know what show he might come in and be good. Bo Nix is a great example. Jackson Dart is a good example. A lot of these guys were heavily derided and they come into the league and they actually do pretty well. He's sat for half a season now, essentially. He's coming into an offense that's not in a good position, but the biggest problem on that offense was the quarterback with Spencer Rattler. So there's opportunity there to come in and even just like give the offense a spark and put a couple of games together, put a couple of drives together even, and put them on the right direction. But I think realistically it's just a move out of desperation.
So Rattler's gone.
Yeah, but he's also, it's an interesting dynamic with quarterbacks because the standard is so high and so difficult to find anyone. What he's done this year, while not being good enough for the Saints to win any games or for them to play well as a whole, he's probably secured himself another 10 or 12 years in the league as a backup. Because he didn't come in and throw three interceptions over and over and over again. He came in and showed some level of competence. So it's kind of he's probably kind of happy enough, even though he's being benched. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, okay. One of the great jobs in the world is being a backup quarterback to backup somebody who never gets injured.
Quarterback and goalkeeper.
We should also talk about two young men who died during the week, Nick Mangold and Doug Martin. Doug Martin was like a staple of fantasy a decade ago for the Bucks, had an incredible 4-touchdown, one of the biggest games in the history of, but had very significant mental health issues. And Nick Mangold had had, I think, appendix or liver issues?
Kidney disease.
Kidney.
Yeah, the Doug Martin story is, it's still, as far as I know, not every single detail of it is out yet. But, like, for example, he jumped out of a window a few weeks ago before he passed away. He was in custody with police after going into the wrong house in his neighbourhood or something along those lines. So, look, the details of it are all very sad one way or another. As a football player, Doug Martin, and I'm just trying to focus on that aspect of it because that's all we can really talk about. As a football player, he was one of these guys, you forget about him because he wasn't the very best, but he carried those Buccaneers teams. He was this incredibly good football player who could contribute as a runner and a passer, and as a receiver, and he also stayed in the field a lot for a running back, which most don't. I'll never forget the Giants and the Buccaneers were kind of fighting with each other to draft him, to try and trade above each other. The Giants wanted to jump ahead of the Buccaneers to get Doug Martin, and they didn't in the end. And for years, the Giants were, the conversation was always huge miss by the Giants. That would have changed, not the direction of the franchise as a whole, but it would have given them a piece that they desperately needed at that time. And he went on to have a great career. That Bucs team, it's quite sad, that Bucs team, because Mike Williams has also died young off of that team. Not Mike Williams, the Chargers receiver, Mike Williams, the Buccaneers receiver, and he was a very good football player as well. So it seems to be, I don't know, I think it might be just I'm getting older and it's like the NFL players who are dying now, I know them. Like, obviously it's a large sample, not a large sample, but it's a big enough sample of the population that these people are going to die from that group. But it feels like we've more and more. And Nick Mangold as well, just quickly on him. He, like, you'll think about Nick Mangold with the Mark Sanchez, Rex Ryan era Jets. He was a staple of that, the centre on that team. But him and Darrell Revis are kind of like the two greatest Jets of the last 20 odd years.
They were the good ones.
Yeah. And as far as everything I've ever heard, Nick Mangold was also just an incredibly good human being in that he would go out and do loads of work for other people, and he had a lot involved with like the Players Association as well, with the, like, fighting for retired players and people like that before he was even retired. So everything we ever heard about Nick Mangold was full on leader, who someone you wanted on your side and anything.
All right. King, good stuff. That's week 8 is in the books. This is week 9.
We never know the week.
We're getting close now to the midway,
to figuring out the week.
Midway point, essentially. And ultimately, we all know none of this matters until after Thanksgiving anyway, right? It's the hoary old cliche, but it's true. So we'll see you next week, folks. Take care.